Accession number 29529, Mr. Tom Austin, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about this trip on the Pasteur.
Yeah.
Not the Louis Pasteur, just the Pasteur.
No, it's called the Pasteur.
Just the Pasteur. And what was that trip like then? So, what was the food like, for instance? I mean,
food wasn't bad. It was very cramped at conditions. I can remember the first day we had the boat drill, and we were assembled on the deck. And we were all lined up, and somebody had the temerity to say, "Where was our lifeboat?" "Lifeboat," they said. "You've got no lifeboat. You've got a raft, you see." So he said, "We can't all get on that. You don't get on it. You hang on the side." And that was our introduction to sister. It was a big convoy, actually. We had quite a number of, I think there was an American large ship, any rate, more than a destroyer. And we took about 8 days, I think it was, we got to Halifax.
Now, what about seasickness? Any problems with seasickness?
I think we all experienced some seasickness, but after the initial things, you got used to it, no problem.
Did you know where you were going?
We were told we were going to Halifax. We were going to Canada, and we arrived at Halifax, and we were put into a train. Now, that was rather interesting, because this was sometime about mid-afternoon or early afternoon, and we sat in this train, which was really antiquated. To give you some idea, the coaches were wooden, the lighting were oil lamps, and the heating was an army-type stove in the middle, which you had lots of a great big bin of wood to put on. Well, it was turned out to be the first snow of the winter came down, and we stoked up this fire. Actually, there was double glazing on the windows, I must say that, but the seats were things that you could put backwards or forwards, all leather seats. And we were on that train until late in the evening. Some people actually disappeared into the town and took a chance and then came back again. And when the train started, it was amazing. You could hardly see the end of the carriage because of the smoke of the oil lamps. And the system apparently with the connection, I don't know particularly how it worked, but I mean, it was a real judder when the train started, and we had this fire going almost, the stovepipe was almost red hot sort of thing. Well, we travelled overnight, and we arrived in the snow at a place called Moncton.
Moncton?
Yeah. Now, Moncton was just being built as a reception camp.
And this is still October?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the following morning, the snow melted, and there must have been something like 200 trucks going around this camp building it. And we got marched there, and you had to more or less walk on gangplanks because there was mud everywhere. Now, of course, the big thing we noticed first of all was the food. I mean, we were given eggs and bacon and bread and etc. And
now, they're things you hadn't had for a while.
Oh, quite. I remember we got put in a billet. It was a two-storey wooden building, barrack block sort of thing. And I can always remember, because we were given in there and it was very cold. And I think something like 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody comes up a ladder to put the stove in, you know. That was the condition of the camp. And then something happened. We were assembled, and we were told to get in with your friends of numbers of 50 at a time. And after we joined there, they said to us, you 50 are going to, shall we say, might be south in... first of all, we were told we were going to Arizona. Now, this was going to be the British Flying Training School, and there were about six of them formed there. Whilst we were then knew we were going down there, we were only about three, four days at the most in Moncton, and at that time, the first rejects from the Arnold scheme came back through Moncton, and there were quite a few of them, and it was an air of despondency on the place because we mixed in the mess, and they said, you're wasting your time going down. Because a lot of them were rejected, not on inability of flying, but of sheer discipline. And as a matter of fact, to give you some idea, one chap actually hung himself in the gym while we were there. Their attitude was that, we said goodbye to our folks and said we'd be coming back with our wings, and this is where we got to. Eventually, I think somebody realised their mistake, and they were given second chances in Canada, a lot of them. So we moved out from there down to through the States. We were taken down, first of all.
So you were going to Arizona?
We were definitely going to Arizona.
Now, what was the journey like?
Rather amazing.
Rain or?
No, it started, as I say, it changed to rain and gradually got warmer. And, of course, when we arrived at the other end, it was quite a different temperature all told.
You were on a train?
On a train, yeah. We changed in Chicago to a line I should never forget. The Rock Island line, and we were taken from one station to the other in yellow cabs, and of course there was a lot of isolationists at the time, and we got abuse thrown at us because we were the first to go through in uniform. Now America wasn't in the war at this time, and we actually went through Chicago in blue uniforms.
And when would that be? Still?
This would be the end of October.
Still, right.
Yeah. And we had an interesting one because I think Archibald Sinclair was the Air Minister at the time and his son was on the train. And when we got to Kansas, at Kansas City, where we had a Canadian officer in charge of us, we were given a coach on the end of this train, which we were given blankets and we had to get down at night just strip down as best you could and get as much sleep as you could on the seats. And when we got to Kansas, it was apparently so prominent, the isolationist business, that we were told we were going to take them around and show them the place, but we stayed on the station. We didn't get out of it. We had then... We went forward and finished up in Phoenix at about, I think on the fourth night, something like that. It was about 70 degrees. And the thing that struck me right away was we were amongst all the citrus groves. And the coach that picked us up from the station had no windows in it. And the smell of orange blossom was, to me, marvellous. We get down to what was called Falcon Field. The original courses that would went down there earlier on were moved over from a field called Thunderbird Field, and there were three courses already in Falcon Field, and we were the fourth one to go in. In other words, 50 in a course. Falcon. It's near Phoenix. It's actually Mesa. And
Mesa?
Mesa, M-E-S-A.
Is that the nearest town?
That's the nearest town.
And what was the name of this flying training school? I mean, did it have a name?
Yes, number 4 BFTS, British Flying Training School.
Now, what was your reception when you got there?
Very good indeed. We arrived, I think it was on a Thursday night. The billets were reasonably comfortable. I mean, they were... open plan, shall we say, like a hospital thing. You would have about six beds.
Were they huts?
Yes, wooden construction.
And comfortable or?
Comfortable. Yes.
What about his bed? I mean, how much space would you have? What was your bed and lockers like?
You had a locker next to the bed. And bear in mind, we were next to the citrus groves. The setup of the, it was almost like a ranch. There was no high wire fence or anything like that. There was a thing you had to get over to get in, but one of the things we felt we wanted to find out first of all, what did you, what were the efforts of getting out free time, you know? And we were told that after duty on a Saturday, you could get out. Now, the amazing thing then was that when we went out after duty in the morning, we had a parade in the morning, the we were met by something like 200 cars of people who wanted to take you out and stay there home for the weekend.
Now, what was it like when you did that? We'll come to the flight attendant. What was it like when you did that with these Americans? I mean, how friendly were they? What sort of hospitality? Marvellous.
They were absolutely marvellous. As a matter of fact, we used to get... There was a state teacher's college not far away, a place called Tempe. And we used to get invitations to go to dances there, that sort of thing. Well, of course, the chaps who were already on the three courses in front of us had fixed up with all their friends already. Well, we actually, three of us used to go around together. We went to one of these dances and we got very well with the local girls there. This is now Arizona University. And we used to go out at, we used to found a rather difficult situation really, because people who would take us in for the weekend, you know, and look after you, we I had to spend our time separated between seeing them and seeing these girlfriends in this state teachers' college, you see. And I'll go a little further on this, is the fact that one place we went to, there must have been about five of us one Sunday. We used to go to church on the Sunday morning, and then go back to their place. They ran a bar, as a matter of fact. And they said, you help yourself, treat us home. And what we would wait for was a brunch, as they called it then, which would be steak and eggs, you see. And I didn't drink. And I happened to say to a Scotsman who's sitting next to me, what do you reckon I ought to drink? He said, well, you can't go wrong, have a whiskey. And I actually had a whiskey, and if I had two whiskies then, bear in mind that I didn't drink up to then, the table would sway a bit. But after 7 months, it was as steady as a rock, you know? And anyway, the other thing about the State Teachers College is rather interesting, because we used to meet these girls, and we used to go over there on a Saturday afternoon. And the system was, you get to the reception and there'd be a lounge, and you said who you'd come for. And you sat in the lounge. Incidentally, there was a separate thing. There was the women's campus and the men's campus. And the girls would come out, and we would go riding on the desert. Now, I'd never ridden a horse in my life, which was rather an experience. And I'll give you an example of what happened with the... I mean, after all, we were strangers to the place. And you could imagine that the... incidentally, a girl in the State Teachers College, if she went out with a chap who was in the ball team, that was a real feather in her cap, you know? And we were out on the desert once. They brought some food out, and we had what we call a weenie roast. You lit a fire, and that was it, you see. And we saw something like about six of these chaps coming across who were in the ball team, football players, all about 6 foot six, you know. And these girls said, don't start any trouble. Well, we understood the fact. I mean, we got their, probably their girlfriends, you see. And It turned out afterwards we got to know these chaps very well. They came, they'd been drinking beer a bit. And we were the best of friends, actually, in the finish. And the amazing part was this, that when we saw a girl back on the Saturday evening to the college, the system was then that the lights went off at 10 o'clock and they had to be in at 10:15. They went on and off, and that was a warning. Well, after we'd been there some weeks, we got introduced to, I suppose you'd call her a matron, who looked after their welfare. And she would give us permission. When it came to this 10:15, there was a playroom at the end of their dormitories, which we were taken to, and we could entertain ourselves with music, impromptu little dance or something, until midnight. Now, the American lads never got past the front door, you see, which was hard enough. We had two films made while we were there, by the way. There was a film called Thunderbirds and Journey Together.
Now, are they films of your training?
Yes, right. Literally. There was Attenborough was in one.
Now, tell me about them. We'll come to your training later. But
yeah.
So, Thunderbirds and...
Thunderbirds and Journey Together, I think it was. Bear in mind...
Now, are these documentaries?
Yes, to a degree. The thing was that the airfield was run by Southwest Airways, which was all connected with the film industry in Hollywood. And when they came across to do these films, incidentally, in the what they called the local valley there, there were various other nationalities being trained. For instance, there were the Chinese.
Stick to the films.
Well, I was getting that because we had to parade round, and the Chinese did the same thing for these films. That was our part in it. And
so you've just been a squad of men.
Yeah, that's right. And we, there was, I'm trying to think of the names of the people who were actually in the film. But the fact was that to compensate us for taking our time doing these marching around, we used to go in the canteen and they say you can have anything you like. There was no beer or anything like that. What they did, they donated money to build a swimming pool in the camp. We didn't have it. The later courses that came in benefited from this, the very good swimming pool there.
And did you meet or see the stars or were you just squads marching about?
Oh, no. We actually met them. There was Jack Holt, Reginald Denny.
You mentioned Attenborough.
Attenborough was in one that was done at the other place. You were given the opportunity.
And could you see yourself on the film, or did you see the finish?
No, I didn't see the film until later, much later.
You didn't see yourself?
No. We were 400 miles from the coast in Arizona, and we had two lots of leave because we had primary training on
Tiger Moth?
No, Stearman's.
Well, let's do that before we do your leave. Now, I'd like that to run through your flying course on the Stearman.
Yeah.
I'm not very familiar with the Stearman.
Well, the Stearman was a heavier aeroplane than a Tiger Moth. Incidentally, bear in mind that we hadn't seen an aeroplane until we got to America. And we learnt out later that the reason we were sent down to Cambridge, they introduced a system where you did some flying on Tiger Moths first, for test your ability to fly, you know?
But
in other words, no, we
had,
we
it
didn't.
Hadn't
we,
happened.
No, I mean, if they found you were you didn't adjust to flying, you were just sent home again. And you've been sent all the way to America, really, on a false pretense, you know.
So, you were do that now.
This was a grading school, by the way, at Cambridge. That's what happened afterwards.
But you didn't have that?
No.
Now, your first flight in your logbook, which you've just got here.
November, isn't it?
Is in November the 5th.
And that's right.
It's a familiarisation flight. Now, this was your first flight.
That's
was
the first
that
flight.
Was that in any way important to you? I mean,
definitely.
Remember?
I mean, that's the first time that I'd been in an aeroplane to start with. And they were civilian instructors, by the way.
But what was that first flight like? Tell us a bit about it. What do you remember about it? What was it? Why was it so?
Well, having seen the air displays at Hendon, etc., and what they did, I was actually then in a situation, I was actually in a real aeroplane, allowed to use the controls of the aeroplane to fly the thing, which is absolutely marvellous to me.
And was it as good as you thought it was?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a problem with my instructor. We didn't quite get on together, his attitude, and I asked for a change. Oh, I don't know, they gave me a change, actually, and I had an instructor who was a very nice man indeed.
Now, what was wrong with the first one?
Well, he was a bit brusque, and our characters didn't match, you know. But the other chap who came on afterwards, a civilian instructor, was a very quiet man, very quietly spoken, etc., a man named Ann Weiler, who was absolutely marvellous. And I soloed at
very early.
Eight hours.
Take me through the dual instruction. What were they teaching you in the dual?
Normal turns, spins, of course, and how to get out of a spin, because that was.
I presume they taught you to take off and land. But
Now
take me through some of this. So what's important when you're taking off then?
Keeping the thing straight to start with, keeping the airspeed right. And of course, you only have basic instruments. There was a little ball, like a level, spirit level, and you had to keep that. In other words, you had to do correct flying. You didn't skid the aeroplane, etc.
So I think the best way to avoid you sort of skirt, what were the controls and flying instruments and that you had in the, that you remember?
Airspeed. You had the turn and bank indicator, as I say. Just basic instruments, that was all.
Just the two?
You had an artificial horizon. Gyro instruments.
And what about flying controls?
Flying controls was a stick, obviously.
Now, explain that to them.
Well,
how did it work? People don't know now.
You were told, you know, you've got control. He would say, follow me through. You had your feet on the pedals and you felt the stick and you felt him doing a manoeuvre. He would say, I'm now going to climb and do a turn to the right. And you followed it through and you followed that. And he'd say, you've now got control and you would then do exactly as you thought he did.
So what did the is it the rudder, the foot pedals?
Yeah, the rudder.
What did that control? What did the stick control?
Well, you see, the Ostname, the elevators, you know, on the wings, if it went down, that put the wing up, and the stick would, on the tailplane, just the basic movements. And the idea was that you flew keeping the instruments correct, so you're correctly flying, you're not skidding the aeroplane, for argument's sake. Well, you're not doing a straight course, you're actually going sideways, in effect. I think that.
How would you do a turn, for instance? I mean,
You kept your nose on the horizon, and this is then that. You kept your nose on the altimeter, by the way. You had an altimeter, so that you kept the right height all the time. So when you did a turn, you didn't lose height or gain height. And you gradually increased turns, so you got a steep turn, etc. You went into, as I say, you did a stall, and you recover from a stall.
Now, can you just explain to me what a stall is?
A stall is you lose flying speed, and you literally drop. You don't get any lift. You lose the lift.
And how would you recover from that?
Put the nose down and straighten the airplane out, etc., and that's it. And of course,
you wouldn't practice spinning before you'd done a solo, would you?
Yes. Oh, yes. Definitely. Because, you know, there's a system of getting out of spin. It's quite straightforward. And some aircraft, of course, could do violent spins. The airplane there was quite... wasn't vicious airplane at all.
So how did you get out of a spin? Well, what explain what a spin was and then how you
got out. You're going round. You're seeing the Earth rotate below you, and you've put the stick forward and levelled it out and straightened the thing out, and then you gradually pulled out.
So it wasn't that difficult if you knew what to do?
It wasn't that difficult. No, not really. I think the most difficult part of all the flying would be either, well, landing, if anything.
Now, what did you have to watch for in landing? I mean,
well, now, what you're doing, you're coming in at a reduced speed. And, I mean, those airplanes at that time, you didn't have flaps, which increased the wing area. You just came in, gradually reduced the speed, until you made what was called a three-point landing. In other words, you stalled onto the ground. The steerman was liable to do ground loops. That was your one trouble.
What was a ground loop?
Where you suddenly went round and...
On the ground.
On the ground, yeah.
And now, how were you at landing? Because landing isn't always natural.
I found it not terribly difficult. As I say, this very mild nature instructor was very good to me. I got on with him very well and... benefited from his instruction.
Now, you did your first solo on November the 19th.
That's
you
right.
You seem to have done it quite early, actually.
8 hours and 40 minutes, I think it was, something like that, which was not bad, actually.
Now, what do you remember that? I mean, it's quite...
Oh, cool. Well, that's it. You would go round, you see, and you'd do some practice landings, and he probably would say to you, right, he'd say... I'm getting out, you're on your own. And he'd tell you to do exactly as you've been doing, you've been okay so far. So you did the pattern around the circuit, you see, and invariably, I would say, you didn't come in the first time. You think to yourself, no, I'll go round again, you know. And there you are, you're in control of an aeroplane, you think, well, I've got to get this thing down, I've done it now already, so... There we are. And you might have bounced a bit. I don't think I did too badly on the first landing, at any rate. That went reasonably well, I think. And then you realise that you were now an airman. You could fly an aeroplane. You could get it into the air and you could get it down again, which was marvellous.